powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Do we go now?
Well, I have good news and I have bad news.
Can we go good news first?
Sure, yeah. Well, it's good news for me. Neither of you care. Washington, congratulations, number 11 on the AP Top 25. Very cool stuff.
No, I care.
Oh, really?
I do care.
Because you cover the Pac-12 Network. Yeah, yeah, they beat, excuse
they're
me, beat number 11. They're number 18. Well, soon to be number 11. And then who knows from there.
Classic Huskies trying to say they're better than they actually are.
Very, very cool for the Washington Huskies. And I will add that the Cougs deserve, I think, recognition as well.
So yeah, especially because we went on the road and beat a number 19 team.
I mean, yeah, no, yeah, it was on really the road. Cool. Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, really important, though, is, you know, we beat number 11 Michigan State.
At home.
Yeah, but number 11.
At home.
Yeah.
And you played before that, Portland State, Kent State. I mean, the schedules are comparable. That's something that baffles me with the situation. Big ups to UW. I was rooting for them. We need the Pac-12 to do well,
yeah.
But don't disrespect my Cougs like that, man. We got Oregon this week, so if we could do our thing, it's Oregon. They bet not do us dirty
again.
Yeah,
especially after Oregon did their thing, not against Georgia, obviously, but in their most recent game, so able to bounce back. So it would certainly be a huge win for Washington State, and I agree, Cougs not getting the respect they deserve.
Give us 25.
That's the good news, okay? And that's really fun. And Curtis, congratulations to your Arizona Wildcats, by the way.
Yeah,
beat
wow.
North Dakota State.
Yeah, an FCS team, but that's the best right. FCS team.
honestly, the best FCS team. And it was just a rough week for North Dakota State in general. Felt horrible for Trey Lance getting injured in that game. His season is over after a broken ankle. And let's get to that game as we start the bad news here. The Seahawks fell to the 49ers 27-7, uncompetitive game, 36 total rush yards, not 36 for Rashad Penny, not 36 for Ken Walker. I mean, in a game that we knew would be about the ground game, the Seahawks apparently didn't get the memo. They allowed 189 from San Francisco on 45 carries and couldn't get any of theirs going, which, yeah, they fell behind, so you can't really run the way you want to. But, Bump, I was so surprised. It's like one team knew exactly who they wanted to be, and the other team was the Seattle Seahawks.
San Francisco was just, they were physical, man. I mean, and you know what Shanahan wants to do. He wants to run the football. Bunch of gap skins. When I say gap skins, I'm talking about pulling guards, pulling tackles, trapping the one tech, trapping the three tech. I mean, they make you be extremely disciplined, and then they add the RPO factor to that. But I'll tell you one thing. When Trey Lance went down, that's when I got even more nervous because I go, who's coming in? Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, I tweeted something out, and someone goes, well, you know Jimmy's record against the Seattle Seahawks. I don't care about no record.
You know Jimmy's record?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Jimmy's record in general. That guy, I mean, he himself doesn't win. They are good with him. They're great with him.
Typically not against the Hawks, though. The Hawks have owned him. But, sure. Jimmy G wins, and he knows his offense. I was more nervous when Jimmy got in this game. But as far as the Seattle Seahawks running, I mean, he got 6 carries for 15 yards for Rashad, 4 for 10 with Kenneth Walker, 2 for 9 with Travis Homer. There was no push on the line of scrimmage. I think the 49ers controlled the line of scrimmage offensively and defensively, and that's where you can win and lose games, especially when you have two quarterbacks who aren't game breakers, who aren't going to do the amazing and pull off wins for you. We got pushed around.
Yeah, I was going to say, the two quarterbacks, if you were to take out the touchdown and interception, which would tell you which quarterback was which, obviously Geno did not have a touchdown but did throw an interception, and Jimmy G had a touchdown and did not throw an interception. If you were to take that away and just do attempts, completions, yards, I don't think you'd be able to tell them apart.
No.
They were two of the same kind of quarterback.
Exactly. They're both managers. They are supervisors, right? Geno, 24-30, 197, one interception. Still completed about 80% of his passes. That's what you're going to get out of Geno. It almost mirrors what he did last week, minus the interception. He had 2 touchdowns. Jimmy, 13-21, 154, 1 touchdown. That's what you're going to get out of Jimmy. These guys have to rely on everything else around them. San Fran rushed 45 times for 189 yards, a long of 16, a long of 51, a long of 20. The longest run for the Seahawks, Stace, 8 yards.
I hate that. I hate it a lot. And that sounds more impressive than it was, because I bet if you looked and started going the third longest run, the fourth longest run, you'd get to, now we're at 3 yards.
Yeah.
Now we're at 4 yards. But, you know, so here's the thing, Bump. If we say, all right, I don't know that Jimmy was the single greatest part of their success for San Francisco, and I don't know that Geno was the single greatest part of Seattle's failure. Then what was the greatest part of success and failure for either of these two teams?
The greatest part of success for the 49ers was just in the way they attack you. They attack you with diversity. Now, you're going to look at the carries and say, 45 times, what do you mean diversity? You know what they want to do. I'm talking about how they run the ball, how they dress it up, how they use Juszczyk, their fullback, how they use Deebo Samuel in the backfield. And then you got this kid, Davis Price from LSU, who steps in and was serviceable, 14 for 33. It's the multiple ways they can get you and keep you off balance. That's how the 49ers are successful. And then you sprinkle in a little bit of Jimmy G, who's going to throw for a few first downs, who's going to have a couple of big plays, had a big play to Dwelly for his lone passing touchdown for a, what was that, 38-yard gain. Does just enough to keep you thinking about him. Now, what happened with the Seahawks is that they were not able to run the football. So, therefore, you're putting all of this on Geno Smith. And with 30 attempts, I think that's like the cap for Geno. About 30 attempts is the cap.
Yeah.
But you don't possess the football. So, if you're throwing the ball more than you're running the ball, you run the ball 14 times, you're throwing it 31 times, and you're not getting first downs. I think you put in your notes, how many first downs did they have?
They converted two of, I think, seven attempts. Yeah. Might be eight attempts, but they converted two.
So, if you're not getting...
I'm sorry. They had like 11 or 14 total first downs, but they had seven third down.
Yes, excuse me. That's what I was looking
converted
for.
Converted to.
Okay, conversions on third down. So if you're not converting on third downs, what do? You're not possessing the ball. You're giving it back to this team. Who is going to run the rock? So they got beat up. San Fran on defense beat you up. They beat you up on offense. Offensively, you couldn't run the football. You couldn't possess it. Recipe for disaster.
From the Mac and Jack's text line, you guys can join this conversation anytime, by the way, 866-979-3776. The 253 texting in, why didn't we run the ball? Penny had like seven carries. To that, I would say, and Bump, I'm going to throw to you in a second for help with the 49ers offense and specifically Seattle's run defense. I would say that the bigger issue in this one, once you fall behind pretty far, you can't run the ball, right? I would have also loved to see them use Ken Walker more. I would have loved to see them use Penny more. I'm still waiting for these two to take off and for it to be the version of the offense I imagined a Pete Carroll offense would look like without Russell Wilson. Once you go down a couple scores, you just can't do that. So I would say table it. Table the concern and still wait to see more attempts. But this game got too far out ahead of them when they had no choice but to try to move down the field and score. The bigger issue to me, and Bump, this is where we could use some of your insight here. The bigger issue to me was what the Seahawks did defensively, which is allow San Francisco to pick up 189 rushing yards going into the game knowing that they would be doing that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to go off of what you said. Your first comment, yes, they were down 20-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
You can't run the football like that. It's nice. You got to sprinkle it in. You keep them honest, but you have to create explosive plays. What's the easiest way to do that? Yeah, good question. But what's the easiest way to do that? Throw the football down the field and gain more yards. What was the other part? I'm sorry.
The other part, I said the bigger concern for me isn't why didn't Seattle run more, but why couldn't the defense stop the run?
Yeah, that was something that I was disappointed to see because I believe the very first play, maybe the first few plays, they had four down linemen. I mean, they have four big boys down there because you know the Niners are going to come out and double tight end and they're going to run the ball, the gap schemes that I described to you. So what do? You occupy the bigs with the bigs, right? You put bodies on bodies. And as the game went along, I just didn't see that. At some point, I saw two down linemen. Then I saw your edge rushers walk up and you got backers there. These guys can play. They're football players. They can make these tackles, but it's all about these matchups. And I just didn't like that matchup. Maybe Clint Hurt saw something in practice or on film that he felt like he could exploit. Me personally, I would have put more bigs in on the defensive line just to occupy these 300-pounders with 300-pounders.
Well, and it's like once you realize what they're doing, like, yeah, you might get beat over the top by Brandon Ayuk. And you might get beat over the top or, heck, like just from the line of scrimmage from Deebo Samuel. But they made it pretty clear. I mean, we had, what, like 18 carries for Jeff Wilson Jr.?
Yeah, 18.
14 for, is it Davis Smith? I'm not sure.
Davis Price.
Yeah. They made it very clear what they were going to do. And, they didn't need to throw. So that's curious. I didn't notice it as much until you said it. And now I want to go back and watch it with that knowledge. And I just don't know. I don't know why.
Maybe he thought that he had an advantage, Clint Hurt, on the edges with those speed rushes. Maybe he thought that they would be able to out-athletic those tackles and get into the backfield. There's a reason for why he does things, right? Just because – You have a reason. Doesn't mean it's going to work all the time.
Yeah,
you know
but I
want
to
I mean?
Know the reason. Yeah. I'd be fascinated to hear.
Yeah, I'd love to know it. And then I'm trying to get into the mind of Clint Hurt. Maybe he felt like, you know, with those faster guys out there, they can slip these blocks. You know what I mean? They can get by these linemen, which makes sense. You know, I understand that way of thinking. But, you know, I'm a couch quarterback. I'm a couch coach. I'm sitting there watching and I go, okay, well, this is what I would do. But this is the beauty of football, right? Week one, you play against a team that's going to air it out. Week two, you played against a team who's going to run the football. Now you got film on both type of approaches, and you grow from it. And that's what this club is going to do.
We are going to obviously get back to the Seahawks, that's specifically going to be – we're going to do a little bit in headline rewrites, but we've got the latest from Pete Carroll at 10:45. Also, what caught my eye at 11, where Bump's going to get back into a little more of this analysis. I've got some other notes of what caught my eye from this game. I want to spend just 2 minutes before we get to headline rewrites on the Mariners. I talked about a rough weekend. Well, the Seahawks falling to the 49ers was part of that. The Mariners dropping 3 on the road to the Angels was another part of that. That includes a 5-1 loss yesterday. The series finale is today. They have a chance to avoid a sweep. And here's the deal, guys. They still have a 4-game lead on the Baltimore Orioles in the wild card. However, is that enough for you?
No, not right now. Not after losing 3 in a row. Maybe, you know, maybe after winning a couple, you feel a bit better about the situation. But it's all about what you've seen lately, right? And what we saw was a game where they lost in a shootout, a game where they lost by one run. Close games, they usually win. Mm-hmm. And then a game where they just couldn't produce because their bats weren't there. So right now, no. 4 doesn't feel like it's good enough. But if guys get healthy, you never know.
Yeah, and the pitching... I don't worry about things that have been consistently great for them. I do worry about things that have consistently been inconsistent, and one of them has been your offense. So when I see pitching struggles, I'm like, we'll see Robbie Ray bounce back. We'll see, Luis Castillo bounce back. When you start looking at a lineup that doesn't have Eugenio Suarez, that doesn't have Julio, who should be coming back soon, and that doesn't have Mitch, then I'm starting to worry because that's been a concern for you.
Yeah, those are your bats. You know, those are the guys who produce for you. So when they're not in there, when they're not doing their thing, you should be concerned because every team has 4 to 6 guys who you can rely on. Every good team has about 4 to 6. The great teams have 8 to 9 and some more on the bench who can come in and get it done. But with the Mariners, you know that, you got to depend on these guys. And if they don't get it done, it's going to be tough.
All right. Well, speaking of Geno Suarez, he's going to get us started for headline rewrites.
Headline rewrites
presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one: we've got the Mariners. They have lost 3 in a row, and Eugenio Suarez has been placed on the 10-day IL with a fractured fingertip on his right index finger. What's the real headline?
None of my headlines are funny today. This one, we're about to find out just how deep this lineup can be.
Man, Suarez has been playing so good, too. That's what hurts the most. I think I saw Lydia Cruz post something when he's worn up throwing the baseball.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is the first time we haven't seen this man smile.
Yep.
You know,
he looks disappointed.
Yeah.
Fingers like patting his back.
He feels like, you know, he's letting his team down. But there's nothing you can do about that. Things happen. You get hurt. Let's just hope that he comes back strong.
I think that in an ideal world, you would be able to say, well, you still got Ty out there. Well, you still got Jesse Winker. Now, Ty, I don't worry about. Jesse Winker, though, no offense to Jesse Winker. I don't mean it personally, but as a player, you haven't been getting it done outside of walking. I mean, you can get on base, but
that's
can
great.
You drive in runs? Can you hit for power?
Get extra
can
bases?
Can you field?
None of
so
that.
Far, none. So far, no. I mean... Look, yes, sometimes the healthiest teams are the ones that make the deepest playoff push, and the good news is Geno may have a chance to come back here for a playoff push, but you've got to be able to at least get it done without those guys.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, Angels got it done without Shohei and Mike Trout. Not like for the season, but I mean... No, they didn't get it done, but they have been able to still find ways to produce, and that's what they need to be able to do here in... Well, not in Seattle. That's what Seattle needs to be able to do in Anaheim. Just avoid a sweep against the Angels,
They've already won the season series. It's all bad. We'll see.
Lineup is out for this one. As a reminder for you guys, we're going to have a short show today. We are taking you right into the Mariners pregame show. That starts at noon. First pitch for this one is at 1:07. Here is the lineup. Crawford leading off. Haniger, France, Carlos Santana, your DH. Moore in center field. Haggerty in left field. Toro at third. I know a lot of you were wondering what would happen there. Frazier, second. Casale is your catcher. Logan Gilbert on the mound. 1:07 p.m. first pitch.
No Julio, no Winker.
Yep. No. Oh, Ty is there at first. Yeah. Obviously no Suarez, but we don't need to. That's obviously there. Yeah. I mean, we'll see.
Well said.
Look at that
well
analysis.
Said, Stacey.
They pay me a lot of money for that kind of analysis. We'll see.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Huskies pummeled number 11 Michigan State and entered this week's AP ranking at number 18. What's the real headline?
Real question. Is Michael Penix Jr. the best quarterback in Washington State?
He's playing like it. He
yeah,
definitely
he
is, man. This guy makes the game look easy. There was a play that he made. I forgot the name of the receiver, number two. Penix rolls to his right. You get that boot look. He flips those hips, tosses it back down the left sideline. I mean, plays like that and movements like that, you can talk to guys like Brock Heward and those quarterback guys. That's difficult. Shifting your way, flipping the hips, going against the grain, get everybody flowing to the right. Little things like that. When I see this young man play, I'm like, might be on to some. Somebody yep. tweeted at me and said, is Michael Penix Jr. a dark horse for the Heisman? And I'm like, you know what? He can put like four more of these games together.
Yeah.
You never know.
If he can string together first halves like that,
yeah,
absolutely. I mean, dark horse most certainly right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's nowhere near like a main focus of the conversation.
No.
But by virtue of if you're playing really, really well, for a team that's going to keep winning and get a little more national attention, then yeah, absolutely. That does become part of the conversation.
Only one quarterback in college football has thrown for more yards than him. He has 1,079. Davis Brin from TLSA has 1,200.
I had to look it up right now. I'm thinking like, I was trying to think of like, okay, where are schools that are really pass heavy? What's going on with Florida? Nope.
Number two.
Man. Good for him.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, 49ers quarterback Trey Lance out for the year with a broken ankle suffered in yesterday's game against the Seahawks. What's the real headline?
The 49ers putting on a clinic with what not to do with a number three overall pick.
Man, I feel so bad for this kid. You look at what they're trying to do with Trey Lance. They're trying to make him a runner, a Colin Kaepernick, a Lamar Jackson. And one of my colleagues said it the best. They go, look, man, he can run, but he's not a runner. Like, you look at Lamar Jackson run. He avoids tackles. He knows when to get down. He knows how to take a hit. This young man has played one season since high school. Mm-hmm. Now you're asking him to go out and play with some grown men who got kids who are 12 and 13 years old. These guys are in their 30s. They are here to smack you. And you look at the way he crumbled when he got hit. That's a guy who doesn't know how to take a hit. Like, you must learn how to take a hit. I feel bad. They put him in that position. But when Jimmy came in, I was like, oh, dang.
I know.
Here we go.
Well, not only put him in that position, and that's why I add a clinic with what not to do, because it's been in virtually every area. As Bump just noted, it was with the way that they were calling plays for him, the way they put him out there, whether it was, you know, not really protecting him, not putting him in the best scenarios, treating him kind of like a quarterback that he wasn't and not taking advantage of ways that he was good, which is great analysis there. I mean, there's also the idea of, yeah, you have a great quarterback situation and that your backup was immediately able to come in and be really effective for you. But it's also maybe not the best situation as far as like emotional growth and confidence for your young guy. And again, this is not just two guys in here. We'll see what happens. This is a guy who has led this team to a Super Bowl and led them back to another NFC championship against a guy that you traded a future first rounder for and more to take it number three overall. What? I still don't get it. Either be all in or don't. And it, you know what? 49ers fans would say, I don't care. We now have a quarterback that can still be a starter. But then what about Trey Lance? So far, you have mishandled this entire thing.
He's out for the year. Jimmy's back. And the team was excited. You see how juiced they were when he scored that touchdown?
Yeah.
They wanted Jimmy. It feels like they wanted him because they knew that Trey Lance had some development, some places to develop. Now he's out for a whole year. What are you going to do next year?
I felt so bad for Lance. It's not his fault. He's not done anything. He's 22 years old, which is so exceptionally young, right? Like, man, when he comes back after, let's say he's gone a year, he's still going to be 23.
Yeah.
That's the age of some guys when they leave school.
Mm-hmm.
22 years old, has all the upside in the world. It feels, I have felt, and maybe I'm wrong, I have felt like the 49ers have lost faith that they made the right decision in taking him. And I wonder if he feels that. And this is all projection and conjecture as someone whose job it is to just look from the outside.
I don't think he felt they lost faith because they tried to get rid of Jimmy. Like, if they were reluctant and saying, nah, we want to keep him around, hopefully they talked to him about the business side of this and said, look, we can't ship Jimmy off for 25 mil. Mm-hmm. We need a backup quarterback. This is your team, though. It doesn't mean that he was comfortable with the situation, but them trying to get rid of a guy who took them to a Super Bowl, took them to a conference championship, should have let him know that, okay, we're going to give you a try. We believe in you. But now, man, when he's at home and he's getting surgery probably on his ankle and he's coming back and he's seeing the way this 49ers team can play, because they are better with Jimmy. There's no denying.
Okay, so question. If this 49ers team with Jimmy G at the helm goes to another NFC conference championship, I'm not saying they win it. I'm saying they go to another conference title game. What's the situation like if you re-enter the next season and you say, okay, Trey, here you go again. You're the starter.
I don't think you can do that. I think if Jimmy takes you to the conference championship, just keep Trey Lance and let him develop. Let him practice for another year. Let him sit.
You're going to end up putting this kid out there when he's 25 and like, all right, first full year as a starter. Let's ride. Let's ride. All right, it's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Heisman, come on, Stacey. You also said the M's would win every Tuesday game, too. Look.
They've only lost one Tuesday game. So you're kind of right on that.
I mean, it's Teal Tuesday tomorrow. We're all going to, you know, put our heads and our hearts together here and wear our teal and try to will this team into a win on Tuesday. I think that's just science. I mean, I'm not making any of that up. All right, we are going to have a short show today. Reminder for you guys. We're going to get to what caught my eye at 11. A little more analysis about the Seahawks game. We've got some fun stuff in the timeline coming up. What I need to know to wrap up the show. We are getting to the latest from Pete Carroll. He was on with Brock and Salk this morning. That's coming up in about 30 minutes first. When does the Mariners worry meter turn on for you? That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
I asked you guys, when does the Mariners worry meter turn on? From the 801, it's already on. I don't know that mine's on, Bump. Mine's not on. I mean, this is a team that it would be very hard for the Mariners to not make the playoffs
at
this point.
Is it plugged in? Like, what is it not turned on?
I see it in the corner.
Is it on the charger?
No, it's not on the charger. I just see it in the corner, and I'm like, I'm not going to need this, right? There's no way I'm going to need to press the panic button on that worry meter that I have tucked into the corner. There's no way. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. Okay. But then, like, I slowly, it's like the elephant in the room, but it's the worry meter. Like, it's slowly just becoming more and more of a thing that I'm noticing. So right now, the Mariners are in third place of the wild card. So they hold the third wild card spot. They still have a 4-game lead on the Baltimore Orioles. Okay. They are going to get Julio back. He's not in today's lineup. I'll read you through the lineup in a second. But he will come back. Gino Suarez will come back, should come back. Will he be the same? I don't know. So you got to make do with what you have right now. What you have right now.
Yep.
Quickly with the lineup, Crawford, Haniger, France, Santana, Moore, Haggerty, Toro at third, Frazier, Casale catcher, Gilbert on the mound, 1:07 p.m. first pitch, trying to avoid a sweep. Bump, is your worry meter turned on?
It is. It's plugged in, but the switch isn't on. It's closer to me than yours. Yours is in the corner. Mm-hmm. Mine is like...
Is it like your little crock pot down here?
Yeah, I got it. Thank you, Jennifer Bumpus, for the crock pot. I got chicken fettuccine on the way, babe. Appreciate you. But yeah, it's exactly. That's where it is,
pot is. You plugged it into the wall and you set it there. So you're like, when I'm ready to press the on button on my worry meter, it's ready to go.
It's ready to go. That's where I am with them. But So now it's like you're looking at what Baltimore has to do. You hate when you have to do this. You want to be in complete control of your own destiny, which they are. But in moments like this, I'm like, all right, what's going on in Baltimore? Now what's going on? They beat Toronto, right? Now they have a series against the Tigers, a.k.a. the Lions. And then they have a series against Houston, Boston, New York. And then they go, Toronto comes to them. Yeah. So I'm looking at this schedule and I'm saying, man, I don't see them winning a series against Houston. Boston, you never know. They're up and down. Definitely not New York. I think Toronto's going to take care of them. Mm. That's what makes me feel a little more better about this situation. But then I look at the Mariners and the health, and that scares me. I'm like, okay, we can get in, but I want to compete too. I don't want to stumble in this thing. I want to compete.
Yeah, you say that, and I agree. And I agree with you. If Julio comes back, you still in your lineup would theoretically, because you do today, you would have Haniger, Julio, and France.
Yeah.
You'd still have those guys. You wouldn't have Suarez.
Yeah.
But I feel like that should be able to still win you games.
It should be. And
it just hasn't been like that lately.
It hasn't. And I think if France could get back to the guy that we saw throughout the year, right? The guy who can just spray the ball all across the dang yard. You know what I mean? I think that would make me feel a bit more comfortable. And it's in there, man. I think his last at bat was just really just sad. That one hurt my heart. It hurt for him. It hurt me for him because I'm like, man, he's better than that. That's not who he is.
Well, speaking of performances of late, Jeremy Chrome at J Chrome 34 has September slash lines available for all the players. Man. One player in the lineup, JP Crawford, is hitting 200.
That's not good.
That is like the highest.
What's the issue? I don't see what's
Frazier, and this is just averages. Okay, just averages. I know that those don't tell the full story, but Frazier 175, France 196, Winker 147, JP 200, Santana 189, Mitch 179, Haggerty 174, Trammell is 067. Toro 118, Lamb 111. Like, do I expect the world from Lamb or even Toro? No. Would I think that France or Mitch Haniger would be higher than that? Yeah. Yeah, I would, ideally. I mean, with Winker, it is what it is. It's been like that this year. Same with Frazier. But your hitters that are supposed to be performing for you are still really struggling. Hitters above 300, Cal 243, Julio 392, he's doing fine. And Gino 271, also doing just fine. Unfortunately, Gino placed on the 10-day IL.
Yeah, you look at those numbers, that's not good. And like you mentioned, it doesn't tell the whole story, right? In September, I don't know, what's their record in September, Curtis, if you could find that. I don't know how hard that is. But when you see those numbers, does it make that worry meter like move a little closer to you, or are you still in the same space?
No, so the Mariners' record in September is actually 8-7.
Okay, so
they're one game above 500.
I'm fine about that, but didn't we talk for a while about how this was going to be the easiest schedule? I know they played the Braves, but
especially the start of this Angels series, which is the start of that 20-game stretch with teams below 500.
Yeah, and so far
they're off to an 0-3 start after going 13-5 against all these teams with winning records.
I don't like it.
God. Just make it easy on yourselves, Mariners.
Now, are we over-complaining? Are we complaining because this team isn't perfect? Because this wild card team, clearly a wild card team, this is not, this is not a world, this isn't a team that looks like the Dodgers, okay? This isn't a team that looks like the Astros. Are we over-complaining that a wild card team, which should be a wild card team, which has the talent to be in the playoffs, isn't being perfect?
Yeah, you know why? Because we're scared. Because we are scared, and I am scared. I wasn't scared until this weekend. You know, before this weekend, I'm like, we'll be fine. It's all good. But then the injuries happen, and then you see them struggling against the Angels, and you're like, don't you do it.
Yeah.
Don't you do it.
We've been hurt many times before. You guys want some good news, though?
Yes, please.
Yeah, hit me.
No Mike Trout in the Angels lineup.
Let's go.
There we go.
Let's go.
That's what I like to see.
But you still got Luis Renjifo at the top of the lineup. Shohei Ohtani bat in second.
He's a Mariner killer, man. Yeah. Goodness gracious.
And was he the former Mariner?
He was, yes.
Yeah, not good stuff. Now, you're going to have, again, Julio's missed two games with back tightness. He'll be back. Ty France hasn't been completely himself, though it was encouraging to see him kind of like briefly turn it around, right? There is a while where you were like, Ty's back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's go. Good to see that. But you're going to have slumps. You're going to have moments where you don't have the games that you want to have. Scott Service, post-game last night, was talking about us. He mentioned us talking about them. Scott, sorry, I was reading the quote. He said, it's on us to adjust. Here he is talking about the offense.
They're playing well right now. It's just where we're at in the schedule. We need to pick it up offensively. There's just no question about it. And make an adjustment starting tomorrow. Because I have a pretty good idea. They're going to pitch us very similar to what they did today and yesterday. And it's up to us to adjust.
All right, when he says they're going to pitch us very similarly to what they're doing, here's what he said about the kind of pitches they're seeing and how they've been as hitters lately.
We're obviously a better fastball-hitting team. And that's why teams throw us a lot of off-speed stuff. I mean, everybody has the same data. But again, that's typical of, you know, younger hitters. Just the more breaking balls you see as you mature in your career, the better off-speed hitter you become. I thought, you know, you look at last night's game, and Taylor Trammell, I mean, absolutely murdered that ball. He crushed it. He crushed it because he laid off the off-speed pitches early in the count to get into a fastball count. And they're up, okay, we're up 2-0. What's the worst thing can happen? Throw him a fastball, bam.
You know how that worry meter is pushed further away?
Yeah.
That the Mariners either start to adjust a little bit more to those off-speed pitches, or you get Julio and Suarez back. But one of those two things, ideally both, happen.
Ideally both happen.
Then you feel great. But if Julio comes back and you have to be without Suarez for a while, what the best thing for you to happen would just be for a few more of those guys to start recognizing those off-speed pitches, to start getting on base just a little more often, and just doing just a little bit more offensively, I think would make a huge difference once you get those guys back.
Yeah, you just got to hold on, man. You have to hold on. You have to be scrappy. You have to be that underdog team now, right? There were moments in this season where we felt like one of the big dogs, where we could play with anybody, but then injuries happen throughout the season. You know, things happen, things change. 162 games, like, mm-hmm. Man, there's so much room for error. So, especially when you don't have the payroll of all these other ball clubs. So, they just got to be scrappy. Hold on tight. We need a Haggerty moment. We need a Demo moment. We need a Santana moment. Like, we need those moments that we saw throughout the season. Let's get them all within these next, 17 games.
All right, why Seattle is looking to recognize a woman in our community with the launch of the Women of Inspiration Award, and they've narrowed it down to 4 finalists. So head to womeninspirationseattle.org to vote today. Polls close September 22nd. It's Bump and Stace. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 AM and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, the latest from Pete Carroll, why he says they need to let Geno do more.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, Seattle Sports has a new name and now a new number. So give us a call or send a text to 866-979-3776. Again, that number, it's 866-979-3776 for a phone call or text to the Mac and Jack's text line. Update your contacts, you guys. Stay connected to the latest on Seattle Sports. You can text us anytime. That's the same number to call, by the way. Pete Carroll was on with Brock and Salk this morning for the Pete Carroll Show. Had a lot to say, the head coach did, about the concerns on offense, what happened with that interception, struggles on defense. So let's go ahead and get to a few of these notes. We're going to start with Pete Carroll on the offense in general. This is one of the first lines he said about his concerns. Quote, "I'm concerned it hasn't been easy for us." Now, at first, Bump, when I heard that, I thought, I'm sorry, what? Wait, why did you think it would be easy? But what he means is what? To me, it means like we can't do the simple things.
Exactly. Take care of the little things. Alignment, assignment, execution. You're not going to be perfect on every single play. It's impossible. Never seen a perfect football game played in my whole life.
Yeah.
But there are little things you can do to make sure that the chances of success go up.
Mm-hmm.
And when there are misassignments, when guys aren't lined up correctly, I think lining up correctly isn't a big issue. These guys are pros. I think it's more just assignment errors and physical errors. I want to say that's what he's talking about.
That's kind of what I took it as it too. I mean, I wouldn't think Pete Carroll thought it would be easy. If he did, I don't know that that's the right call. What I took it as like, I am concerned that everything is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I am concerned that things that we've practiced over and over and over again, simple conversions, right? Like easy pickups on third down, not having penalties,
yeah,
not having holding calls, that those things are somehow hard. Like that's how I took that. As far as trying to make things easier, I don't know that this make things easier per se, but it's certainly a realization that Pete Carroll had is that they can't hold Geno back anymore. That's another thing he told Brock and Salk this morning. He said, we need to give Geno more opportunities. Asked what that meant. What do more opportunities mean? What does it mean to open it up for Geno? He said, we need to make sure the ball's going down, going to DK down the field.
Exactly.
We have not seen enough of that.
No, we haven't. We saw Tyler Lockett with 9 for 107.
Yeah.
All of his passes were intermediate. But it seems like the design plays, the only shot downfield that I can remember off the top of my head was that flea flicker type play to DK that was called back because illegal man down the field.
It was a bummer. It's 49 yards.
And that was a beautiful, great catch by DK. Yeah. Goodness gracious. That's why you pay that man. But it's more of designing plays to where he is in the read and the chances of him getting the ball are high. It shouldn't get to a trick play to get this man the ball. So I think allowing Geno to push the ball down the field all starts with calling the plays that allow Geno to push the ball down the field. It's so hard. That's why I always wait until I see the all 22 to give a strong opinion on what's going on on the back end because I can't really tell what DK's doing or how they're trying to get him open until I truly see that. But from what I see on the condensed version and when I watch the replay is that it seems like there aren't too many plays designed to push the ball downfield.
Let's talk about some of those missed tackling. I'm reading a tweet directly from Brandon Gustafson, friend of the show, Brandon Gustafson, who has the quote from the Pete Carroll show this morning. If it's not up on SeattleSports.com's podcast section, it should be soon. Asked about tackling, Carroll said it starts with getting off blocks better and having better team tackling. He said the team needs to be better schematically to get guys in better position to get those tackles and stops. So he says they need to be better schematically. Last night, post-game, Pete Carroll said, it's different guys missing tackles. We need to get less of these situations where guys are just one-on-one. Help fans make sense of some of that. When Pete Carroll is recognizing it as a problem with, we have guys that are kind of left alone in one-on-one situations. We're not getting enough guys to the ball. And then here, he kind of echoes it, saying we need to be better schematically. What kind of things is he alluding to?
Well, he also said you got to get off blocks.
Yeah.
Right, so guys have to get off blocks. There's a play that he pointed out to Deebo Samuel, to where I think Uchenna had him in the backfield, had like one paw on him, but somehow Deebo gets away. Mm-hmm. That's what Deebo does. That's what good runners do. They break tackles. So what that means is guys have to get off blocks.
To tackle.
That's blackles. That's a good one, right? They have to get off blocks to help out, right? To get 11 hats to the football. You hear coaches talk about all that all the time. Hats to the ball, hats to the ball. That means like, look, these guys make plays too. All right, they make guys miss. They're strong. You get three or four guys to corral them, the chance of you making that player better. Now, schematically, I got to wait till I get that all 22 NFL, man. If y'all can send me the all 22 right after the game, I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
man.
Hey, NFL, if you're listening right now, Rog.
Hey, Roger Goodell. Hey, ever do anything?
I need that in my life. But from what I've seen schematically, it's just, you know, like a couple things that I mentioned. Like, all right, let's get bigger bodies on bigger bodies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's make adjustments when we see these motions and these shifts. You know what I mean? That's the only thing that I can really point to when he says, schematically helping out. So it's lining guys up correctly, getting off of blocks, and just making plays. Be football players.
Also, like, let's be real. I'm backtracking a little bit to offense. But speaking of schematically and speaking of things you can do, you're not going to be able to run the ball that effectively if a defense doesn't think you'll take shots downfield ever.
Yeah.
All they're going to do is stack the box. I know that that's a very simple way of looking at it, but so far this team hasn't been able to run the ball. And now in game two, it was tricky because they fell behind pretty early, but they weren't really committing to it too much. And then all they were doing was running ineffectively and then throwing it ineffectively. Like, you got to be able, if nothing else, I mean, I know Pete Carroll talked about trusting Geno more, but if nothing else, you're not going to get the run game going if all you do is avoid those deep shots and avoid taking risks offensively.
Yeah, and if you watch the 49ers, man, they run a 4-3 defense. So naturally you're going to have seven guys in the box regardless. Mm-hmm. And then they roll their safeties down, who I really like. They got a young safety over there, Talanoa Hufanga,
yeah,
I believe.
He was all over.
Everywhere.
You actually, credit to you, I thought about this the moment I heard him. You mentioned him during the huddle when we were talking with Nick Wagner.
Yeah.
And you were like, this guy caught my eye in week one.
Yeah. So they rotate him down, so now you got eight guys in a box. So their defense is built to stop that run. And you're right. If you do not put pressure on that back end, there's no reason for them to drop their safety over the top now and play it too high. And if you're not creative with your play calling, like once you become a bit predictable, it's less stress on that defense, you know? This defense is built to stop the run. That's exactly what they did.
I also wonder, like, they seemed, you're going to talk about this and what caught my eye about the creativity on offense some of what you saw against Denver and then what you saw. Mm-hmm. Okay, then I'm going to hold off on it. I'm going to hold off on that question. Okay. We're going to get to it with what caught my eye. Bump and I are going to talk about some of the big things we noticed in this game. We're entering into our final hour of the day. You can start sending in your questions now for What I Need to Know, 866-979-3776. That's coming your way at 11:45, less than an hour from now. So we are heading into our final hour of Bump and Stacey, kicking it off with What Caught My Eye. And Bump noticed something very different between week one and week two on offense. That's next.